All and a friend. At Western schools, there have been a lot of deaths in the past few months, and it's been something the school's been talking about quite a bit with kids. And was last Saturday. And so these types of funeral reminders remind us of Solomon's words. Solomon said this in Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verse 2. He says, "It's better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men. And the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better." Solomon really gets our attention here when he says that it's better to go to a funeral than a party. Notice he's not saying it's wrong to go enjoy a feast or a celebration with all of its happiness and its pleasant times together. Nor does he say that we should just spend our days mourning and passing our time in quiet contemplation of death certainty. That's a bit of a morbid existence. But he is saying that when we go to a funeral or visitation, or when we read an obituary, when we hear of a death notice, it can be better for us than a party because we can learn something from it. And we can be reminded of something that's very important. The very situation itself can make us think. And so it leads us to ask, what should we take to heart as we consider funerals and the reality of death, the reality of life's short existence? And one of the things that we should be reminded of, first of all, is this: life can be short. Life can be short. Sometimes at the funeral home, we hear things like, "Well, he was so young." Or, you know, "They weren't really that old." And it can really hit us between the eyes when someone dies who's about our age, or someone who's younger than we are. And it starts to make you think, doesn't it? It reminds us that there are no guarantees of tomorrow, regardless of our age. In the Old Testament, we read about Hezekiah. In Hezekiah, when we read Isaiah chapter 38, Hezekiah was told that he was going to die. His time was about up. Take a look at Isaiah chapter 38, though, and notice what happens. Isaiah 38 verse 1 says, "Hezekiah was sick and he was near death." And Isaiah tells him, Isaiah is a prophet, and he says, "Set your house in order, for you are going to die and not live." And then verse 2 says, "Hezekiah turned his face to the wall and he prayed." You read verse 9 and what you find is that Hezekiah was given a new lease on life. He was given an extension. God answered his prayer. He doesn't always answer those prayers for more time, but he answered Hezekiah's prayer for more time. And what you read in verse 10 is what Hezekiah wrote, who had been sick and recovered from his sickness. Verse 10 says, "I said in the prime of my life." And that's sad when people die in what you would call the prime of their life. "In the prime of my life, I shall go to the gates of Sheol. I am deprived of the remainder of my years. I said, I shall not see Yah, the Lord, in the land of the living. I shall observe man no more among the inhabitants of the world. My lifespan is gone. It's taken from me like a shepherd's tent. I have cut off my life like a weaver. He cuts me off from the loom. From day until night, you make an end of me." Notice some of those phrases there. Hezekiah is writing about how upset he was, that in the prime of his life, there was, it seemed, certainty that he was going to die, that he was going to be cut off, that he was not going to get to experience life anymore, that he's been cut off like a weaver, cut something off the loom. But Hezekiah is given a second chance. not everybody's given that second chance. And one of the things that we need to realize, whether we're given a second chance or not, life just always seems too short. Life, you know, as the old phrase goes, time flies. It's here and it's gone. And so in James chapter 4, verses 13 and 14, here's how James puts it. Come now, you who say today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city and spend a year there and buy and sell and make a profit. He's speaking to business-minded people. He's saying, come now, you who are thinking about business and making money and you're making plans and how you're going to profit and how you're going to strike it rich. He says in verse 14, though, that you don't even know what's going to happen tomorrow. In other words, you don't even know if you're going to have a tomorrow. He says, instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. Why? Because look at verse 14. It says, life is like a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. You're not guaranteed a tomorrow. So what God is calling people to do through the writing of James is think about how you can best serve him today. And quit making so many plans for the future. Life can be short. And so because life is a lot like the morning fog or the mist, it's here for a while, it's gone very soon, then let's not assume that we're going to have a tomorrow. And when you don't assume you're going to have a tomorrow, you live every day with fervor. And you fill every day with love. You end every conversation with kindness. You treat every person in a positively memorable way because you don't know if that's the last time you're going to have with them. Life can be short. Now, that's one of the first things that we could learn from a funeral, and we learn from some of these funerals that we've heard about and attended lately. Here's a second thing, though, that we need to really take seriously, and that is not everybody is going to heaven. And this one kind of hurts a little bit. Sometimes it hurts to say, and it hurts to be really just quite honest and straightforward about it like that. But the fact of the matter is, not everybody's going to heaven. Luke chapter 16, I want you to read about somebody that Jesus says, and Jesus stated, didn't go to heaven. He speaks about a rich man. There's two people in this story. There's a rich man and there's Lazarus. And you read in verse 19, there was a rich man who was clothed in purple, fine linen, and he fared sumptuously every day, lived in luxury. Rich man, he really enjoyed life here. Now there was a beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was laid at his gate. And Lazarus wanted to be fed with the crumbs that fell from the rich man's table. So here's Lazarus so hungry that he's just hoping for a few crumbs. The dogs came and licked his sores. So it doesn't seem like there's any medicine or medication or anything for his wounds. And so the dogs come, and that's the soothing that he received for his sores. Very disgusting thought, isn't it? So hungry, he's begging for crumbs. The only relief he gets is from the licking of a dog. And so the beggar died. This man dies, and he was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. He's actually comforted in heaven. And the rich man died, and he was buried. And being in torments in Hades. Now, this is Jesus. There are a lot of people, they expect a preacher to always preach people into heaven, to always offer comfort, to never say anything negative about the situation. And yet Jesus, who we're to take our example from as a preacher, he clearly states that this rich man is in torments in Hades. And he lifted up his eyes, and he saw Abraham afar off, and Lazarus in his bosom, and he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me. Send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue. For I am tormented in this flame. Situation's reversed here. Beggar was begging for crumbs from the rich man's table. The rich man wouldn't give him anything. Now here, the rich man is in Hades, and he's begging for just one drop of water in Hades. And it's impossible to give him any comfort. Not everybody is going to heaven, and this rich man didn't. And Jesus makes that pretty clear. There's other passages that make that pretty clear too. And that's something that we need to take to heart. And something that we need to use as motivation in our lives. that we want to go to heaven. And we don't want to be like the rich man who lives selfishly and sumptuously and luxuriously. And then, as soon as the judgment occurs, he's in Hades. Take a look at 2 Corinthians 5:10. It says, we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. We're going to be judged one day by Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body, according to what he has done, whether good or bad. Whether good or bad. Some people have done good in this life, some have done bad, and that's going to be part of the judgment. Jesus speaks of the judgment again in Matthew 25. He says some are going to be separated like the sheep and the goats, some on the right hand and some on his left hand. And of course, some are going to be rewarded and some are going to go away into eternal punishment. In John chapter 5, verses 28 and 29, what you read in verse 28 is from Jesus again. He says, don't marvel at this. The hour is coming in which all who are in the graves will hear his voice, and they will come forth. Those who have done good will come to the resurrection of life. Those who have done evil to the resurrection of condemnation. Some are going to be receiving eternal life, some eternal condemnation. And you know, here's the real shocking verse to a lot of folks. It's in Matthew chapter 7, and it again is from Jesus. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 7, basically, that there are some good folks who are not going to end up in heaven. They consider themselves good. There might be other people that consider them to be pretty good people, but Matthew 7:21 says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven. Instead, he says, verse 21, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. It's not enough just that someone cried out Lord at some point in their life. Jesus says we need to be people who are doing the will of the Lord. Not just claiming his lordship, but acting in submission to his lordship. Verse 22 says, many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, haven't we prophesied in your name and cast out demons in your name and done many wonders in your name? And then Jesus says, I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. Some people die unprepared. And that's what we learn from passages like John 5 and 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and Matthew chapter 7, that there are some people who are not prepared for that judgment. And they're not prepared for eternity. The rich man certainly died unprepared. Jesus doesn't beat around the bush concerning the fact that rich man died in torments. Too many funeral preachers want a comfort where there is no comfort. We can't say rest in peace to the person who did not do the will of Jesus. And we can't sing go rest high on that mountain to someone who didn't submit to the lordship of Jesus in their lives. Not everybody's going to heaven. And we need to take that seriously. We need to consider what we say seriously to others in those moments and situations and speak tactfully and carefully. We need to consider whether we're that person who's not prepared for eternity. And so those are some of the things we need to take to heart. Life can be short. Not everybody's going to heaven. Here's a third thing. Death is too late to act. And so if you're waiting until it's too late, you've waited too long. Death is too late. Luke chapter 10 and verse 27. And act is the key word there. We need to do something now, while we have time. You're not always going to have opportunities to care for other people, to show kindness to our friends, to express our love to our families, to say thank you to people who have helped you. You need to be doing those things now, while you can. My grandmother's adamant that when she passes away, she's 95 years old, and so she's pretty honest and open about the fact that that's going to happen someday. But she's pretty open about the fact, she said, I don't want flowers at my funeral. She tells us this all the time. I don't want flowers at my funeral because the time to send me flowers was while I was alive. And I don't want them around my cat. And we say, Grandma, guess what? You're not going to have any choice over it. So there might be flowers there. I don't know. I'm not telling people not to send flowers to you. But I understand the thought. Do stuff for people while you have them with you. Don't wait until it's too late and then be filled with regret that when you have the opportunity to show kindness and love and care, you didn't do anything. In Luke 10 and verse 27, it says, he answered and said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. One of the great commands is loving your neighbor as yourself. Do what you can now. You know, one of the beautiful things in Acts 9 about those who are gathered around Dorcas and near the room where Dorcas was laid after she passed away, one of the beautiful things is that they were remembering what she'd done while she was alive. In Acts chapter 9, verse 36, you read it, there was a certain disciple named Tabitha, and that's translated Dorcas. And this woman was full of good works and charitable deeds which she did. And you know how she was remembered because of that? She was remembered so fondly and admirably by these people. In those days, she became sick and she died, verse 37 says. They laid her in an upper room. And in verse 38, there was a city that was near Joppa, and the disciples had heard that Peter was there. So they send two men to him, imploring him not to delay in coming to them. So Peter arises, he goes to them, and when he had come, they bring Peter to the upper room where Dorcas is. And all the widows stood by him, weeping and showing the tunics and garments which Dorcas had made while she was with them. One of the beautiful things about Dorcas is she did what she could while she was alive. And these people remember her for that. Do what you can while you have the opportunity to do it. Use your opportunities to help and to act. In Luke chapter 16, one of the great regrets of the rich man is that he didn't do what he needed to do while he was alive. And so the rich man, to go back to that parable, to go back to that story, Luke 16 and verse 25, the rich man is told by Abraham, son, remember that in your lifetime, our lifetime, that's the from birth to death, in your dash, in your lifetime, you received your good things. And likewise, Lazarus, evil things, but now he's comforted, and you are tormented. Verse 26 says, besides all this, between us and you, there is a great gulf fixed. You can't jump. It doesn't matter what people say. By the way, that movie I said this morning, I said I watched the movie Coco. That's one of the false things that it teaches. It teaches that we can jump from, you know, the land of the living to the land of the dead and back and forth. That's not true. Still has a good message at the end, but that's not true. And it's not true because of this passage here. Jesus says, there's a great gulf fixed, and you cannot pass from here to the other side. And he says in verse 27, I beg you therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house. What is the rich man asking Abraham to do? Send someone to my father's house. Do something good for my family. What was the good thing he wanted to do? He says, I've got five brothers, and I would like Lazarus to go testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torment. Please tell my brothers about the Lord and about God. Please tell them about being obedient to you, because I don't want them to come here. And Abraham said, they have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. He said, but no, Father Abraham, someone who goes to them from the dead, then they'll repent. But he said to him, if they don't hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rise from the dead. You had your opportunity to tell your friends and your neighbors and your family about God and to be obedient to God while you were alive. And if you don't use that opportunity and you're gone, there won't be another one. So don't be like the rich man who didn't use his opportunity and didn't use his life as a time of action. Use the time that you have now to act in obedience to God and to share the importance of obedience with other people before it's too late. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 13, Solomon, at the end of this message, he comes to this conclusion. And he's written about all the things he's done. And Solomon spent a good period of his life living what you call a worldly and materialistic lifestyle. But you know what? At the end, I'd like to think that Ecclesiastes is written by a mature, wise, experienced Solomon who looks back on that life and who realizes that he wasted a lot of his time. And he's calling out to everybody who's reading this message, and he's asking them to consider how much time he wasted and how important it is that they not waste their lives. And so he says at the conclusion, of the whole matter is this: fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. This is really what really matters in life. A respect and a reverence for God and doing his commandments. For, here's why it matters, because God's going to bring every work into judgment. Because you're going to stand before God in judgment, and guess what? How much money you had and what kind of car you drove and what kind of degree you had up on your wall, none of that's going to matter in the judgment. What's going to matter is whether you were obedient to God and lived what he would call a good and obedient life. Death is too late to act, though. So you've got to make those changes now. And so, quit living for things. Make those changes now and quit living for things. Going to the house of mourning makes it extremely clear that we're not taking anything with us at death. You're not going to take your money, and you're not going to take your property, and you're not going to take your possessions. It really is true. You can't take it with you. In Luke chapter 12 and in verse 13, let's read another example in Scripture. Luke chapter 12 and verse 13, again in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus speaks so often about death, and he speaks often about money as well. One of the things that he says in this particular instance is there's a man telling Jesus, saying, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Now, here's somebody focused on money. And Jesus says, "Man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you?" So one of the things Jesus says is, first of all, I'm not going to get in the middle of your money issue. It's not Jesus' job to help divvy out people's inheritances. He says to them, here's what I will tell you, though. Take heed and beware of covetousness. Take heed and beware of covetousness is the love of money, about being greedy. He says, because your life doesn't consist in the abundance of the things you possess. And that's what Jesus tells them. Quit living for stuff and quit living for things. It's similar to what Paul wrote in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 6. Godliness with contentment is great gain. We brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. So why are we living for things? Things that we can't take with us. Paul says, having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. But if you desire to be rich, you're going to fall into a temptation and a snare, and all kinds of foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Don't be too focused on money. Look at Mark chapter 8, verses 34 through 38. Mark chapter 8, verses 34 through 38. And again, Jesus speaks about money, and he speaks about it in the same conversation where he's speaking about the importance of taking up your cross and following him. He says in verse 34, "Whoever desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." By the way, when Jesus spoke to the rich young ruler, what was it that the rich young ruler was called to deny himself of so that he could follow Jesus? He was told, "Go and sell everything that you have and then come follow me." Jesus speaks here again about money in the same context in which he's speaking about denying yourself. In other words, don't make your focus about money and living a life of luxury. He says instead, focus more on spiritual things. Go on. "Whoever desires to save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it." Verse 36. "What will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul?" Jesus is saying there, quit living for things. And it doesn't matter if you've got every toy in the entire world, and if you've got all the property in all of the world, if you lose your own soul, then you've gained nothing in the end. "What will a man give in exchange for a soul?" Jesus asks in verse 37. And then notice verse 38, he's connecting this to the judgment. "Whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him the Son of Man also will be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." Don't be ashamed of Jesus. Live for Jesus and quit living for things. You know, there's some people that won't live for Jesus because they know living for Jesus will affect their things. claiming to be a Christian, a follower of Jesus, might hurt that job promotion. It might hurt their reputation, their popularity. It certainly can hurt your political office and your political desires. Don't be ashamed to live and to stand for Jesus, even if it means denying yourself and giving up things. Jesus calls you to do that. But here's the last thing that I want you to see, and that is, here's another thing we should take to heart. Life can be short. Not everybody's going to heaven, so you need to be prepared. Death is too late for you to act. You need to quit living your life for things, and you need to choose now. You need to choose now. You've got time to choose, and if you're listening to this sermon, you've got time. That's one of the great blessings about being able to hear what we're saying right now, is you've got time. Some of the people that maybe you've been to their funerals, and you've heard about those death notices, and they're out of time, but you're not. And you need to do something while you can. For the one who has died, all your choices are done and no more can be made, but you can still change your life. Look at Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12, we read about another rich man who's called the rich fool. The rich fool had a choice. In Luke 12 and 16, it says, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully, a prosperous life. He thought within himself, saying, what shall I do? I've got no more room to store my crops. I'm out of room for all my crops. And he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and I will build greater. And then I will store all my crops and my goods. He's got big plans for the future. Big plans for what he's going to do on his property and his land with his assets and buildings. And I'll say to my soul, after he's done that, he says, I've got this big plan. It's kind of my last big project I want to accomplish. But here's what I'm going to do after that. I am going to say, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. So I'm going to say to myself, is what he's saying, take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. I'm going to sit there and I'm just going to enjoy all my property and all my goods, and I'm going to eat good food, and I'm going to drink good drinks, and I'm going to just rest and relax and retire. And what we're told in verse 20 is God said to him, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. And then whose will those things be which you have provided? God's telling him, you've worked so hard. And you've worked so hard for things that you're just going to pass on to somebody else and you won't ever get to enjoy. And yet eternity, an eternity in heaven, that's a place in a moment that you could enjoy forever. Why is it we spend so much time on the little short life we have here and we don't spend enough time on it, the eternity? A time that's just unfathomable and undefinable, an eternity that we can enjoy in heaven. Jesus is using this parable to call us to think less about being rich toward ourselves and to think more about being rich toward God. And that's what he says, verse 21. So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. You've got a choice. Can you say what Paul could? Can you say that right now? That if your life was over, that you fought a good fight, you finished the race, you've kept the faith, that you're ready. Are you ready now? We've all come short, and so this lesson isn't intended to teach that we're going to be saved by our good works. We've all come short of God's glory in our sins. But God's Son died for us, and we can choose new life as we obey His gospel. And God created us with the ability not only to choose our lives, but to change our lives for the better. These choices and these changes have to be made, though, while we still have time to do it. Maybe you've lived a bad life up to now, a sinful life, a life of selfishness, not thinking about eternity, just thinking about your earthly accomplishments. But it's God's calling you right now to think a little bit more about eternity, and making good choices for eternity. These are just some of the things that the wise can and need to take heart. And take to heart from the house of mourning. So are you ready for the inevitable? I've used this illustration before, and I'll just use it again. But people buy house insurance. because there's a possibility their house can be broken into, or their house can catch fire, or their house can flood. We buy house insurance because of that. We buy car insurance. The state makes us buy that. But then we buy car insurance because there's the possibility. We don't know if we're ever going to get in a wreck, but there's a possibility we could get in a wreck and something that could happen. So we buy car insurance. There's all kinds of other insurance, too. There's travel insurance, and there's trip insurance. And Jonna and I, we got our blood taken this week because we're changing around our life insurance a little bit. But here's something that we know is going to happen. We know we're going to die. Hebrews 9, 26, 27 says that we're all going to die, and then after that will come the judgment. You know you're going to die, and yet how many people, they're prepared for the possibility of an accident or fire or some travel issues, and yet they're not prepared for the certainty that is death. Are you prepared? If you're not, we give you that opportunity to be prepared if you want to come forward and obey the gospel. And we give the opportunity to study and to think a little bit more about what you need to do to get prepared if you feel like there's more that you need to learn. But take the reality of death to heart. And if you want to obey the gospel now and start getting prepared, the opportunity is yours while we stand and while we sing.
Would you be free from your good and